Thank you for joining Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm here with Stephen Youngblood, professor of journalism at Park University. He's got a relatively new book on peace, journalism, principles, and practices that he's one of the lead organizers for an annual peace-building conference co-sponsored by Park University and Johnson County Community College. Tell us about that, Stephen.
Sure. Well, the sponsors are Park University, Johnson County Community College, the International Relations Council, and Avila University. So it begins on the 25th of October with a film presentation and panel at Avila University in South Kansas City. We're still working on finalizing what that film will be. Last year we had Kevin Wilmot talking about one of his films, so I know that we'll come up with something interesting and exciting. The following day, October 26th, is dedicated to journalism and specifically radio as a peace-building tool. So the radio presentation, so Friday's October 26th will be at Park University. And we have confirmations from our friends at KKFI who will be talking about peace building with KKFI. We'll also be talking with Laura Ziegler from KCUR about some of their peace building efforts. Then we'll be visiting as well with peace builders from Cameroon. So we'll be Skyping in the Cameroon Community Media Network, and that should certainly be interesting. Then Saturday the 27th is a full day of events at Johnson County Community College, highlighted by keynote speaker Ambassador Bill Taylor from the U.S. Institute of Peace. He'll be talking about achievements in peace building, and that achievements in peace building theme then will carry on throughout the rest of the day. We'll have panelists discussing their peace-building achievements both locally and internationally. And lunch is even free. So you can just Google JCCC Peace-Building. You'll find the website and you can register for your free lunch on that website. So we've had a good attendance in the past. We're looking to boost it up even more this year. And everyone is welcome. And all the events, including lunch on Saturday, are free.
Sounds very phenomenal, Professor Youngblood. Tell us more about your program here and what got you into this.
Well, I'm the director here at Park University of the Center for Global Peace Journalism. We've been operating since 2012, although I've been doing peace journalism several years longer than that. So probably 10, 11 years I've been doing peace journalism. So I've been working with journalists around the world, as well as academics and students on peace journalism, which is, by definition, when reporters and editors make choices that can create an atmosphere conducive to peace. So my center works with these journalists in, as I mentioned, virtually everywhere. So just in the past year or so, I've been to Pakistan. I did a semester-long stint in Ethiopia as a U.S. State Department Special Representative. I just got back just a few weeks ago from Cameroon, where I'm working with the Cameroon Community Media Network. We publish a twice-a-year magazine called The Peace Journalist, which is available on our Center for Global Peace Journalism website, which is simply at park.edu/peacecenter. That's park.edu/peacecenter. And on that website, you can find out more information as well about the center and its activities and so on.
What got you into this? Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got attracted to this and why you thought this is so important that you needed to spend so much time on it.
Well, I've been at Park University. This is my 22nd year. Even though I joke with my students, I look much too young to have been here 22 years, and somehow my students aren't buying that. But anyway, it started while I was on a Fulbright scholarship in Azerbaijan in 2007. And so the U.S. Embassy called me and said, hey, would you like to do a peace journalism seminar in Georgia? Not the state of Georgia, but the country of Georgia, which is adjacent to Azerbaijan. And I said, well, of course. And they said, well, what do you know about peace journalism? I said, you know, I know plenty. Don't worry. I'll be able to do this. So as soon as I hung up the phone with them, I Googled peace journalism. And so I did that first seminar, and I was really hooked. I really saw peace journalism as the intersection of two of my greatest interests, which are, of course, journalism and peace. And so it seemed like a pretty good fit for me. And as I said, I've been very fortunate in that I've been able to travel and work with journalists in lots of different places to promote this idea of peace journalism.
So give me some, can you give me a thumbnail of one of your greatest successes, you feel, and some of the greatest challenges we still face?
Well, first of all, I don't know if I call any of the successes my successes. I think to the extent that peace journalism has proven its mettle, I think it's done, the accomplishments are attributable to the local journalists, the local journalism organizations, and so on, that have really embraced this idea. I guess one example off the top of my head would be a year-long project that we did in Uganda that was designed to prevent media-induced or exacerbated violence around the time of a presidential election. And we did seminars all around the country. We traveled 14,000 kilometers. So I had several Ugandans tell me that no white man has traveled that far in the history of Uganda. I don't know if that's true, but it was a long way on a lot of bumpy roads. But Ugandan journalists really embraced this idea and I think really improved the quality and the framing of the reporting that they did. And as a result, for that presidential election, indeed, there was no media-induced or exacerbated violence. And again, that's not attributable to me. That's attributable to my colleague, Gloria Laquet, who's the director of the... I want to make sure and get this right or she'll kill me. The Peace Journalism Foundation of East Africa and her dozens of colleagues in Uganda who really embraced this concept and ran with it. In terms of challenges, the challenges are many. And wherever I go, one of the first things that we do is we'll list obstacles. So what are the obstacles to peace journalism? And everywhere we go, there are obstacles. So the obstacles here in the U.S., are no less present, but they're a lot different than the obstacles in, say, Cameroon. So in Cameroon, where there's an insurgency against the government, it's an Anglophone, Francophone crisis, largely. You have these various factors that are conspiring to make life very, very difficult for journalists. And in fact, in Cameroon, in July, we ran into this firsthand. We were giving a peace journalism seminar and the police came and literally shut us down, which is something that's never happened to me anywhere else. And the reason why was pretty obvious. The authorities are nervous, especially when a group of English speakers get together. They see a conspiracy, which it certainly was not, but that sort of nervousness is indicative of the numerous troubles that journalists face in Cameroon, and I really genuinely fear for their safety. In fact, the safety of journalists is going to be the theme of the October 2018 Peace Journalist magazine that we've begun working on.
Right, and that, of course, contrasts starkly with the massacre in just south of Uganda, Rwanda, right?
So the Rwandan genocide?
The Rwandan genocide was driven by media. Am I right?
Well, I don't know if I would say it was driven by media. Media was one of the contributing factors. In fact, in my peace journalism class today, this is something we're talking about. So in 1994, a radio station called Radio Mil Colleen broadcast a number of very inflammatory anti-Tutsi statements that helped to fuel the genocide in Rwanda. In fact, several of the personnel from Radio Mil-Colleen were indicted and convicted by the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity. I've spoken about the genocide with, I've read about it and spoken with Paul Rusesa Baguina. You may not know the name, but you know who he is. He's the hero of the movie Hotel Rwanda, the man who was portrayed by Kansas City's very own Don Cheadle. And he said the same thing that Romeo Dallaire, who headed the UN mission there at the time, said, and that is that the genocide would have occurred probably without the media, but that the media helped to deepen and lengthen the genocide. And I know it sounds strange, lengthen the genocide. The whole thing lasted 100 days, I believe it was. But still, the media took a bad situation and made it much, much worse.
So let's go back to Cameroon. Are you you're working with anyone who have you done or helped facilitate the peace journalism classes in French for the French language journalists there?
So we've worked with. I've been there twice now. So I spent a couple of weeks in the summer of 2017, and then a month, basically the entire month of July this year. We've worked with. Between those 2 years, we've done, I don't know, six or seven seminars in both with both Anglophone and Francophone journalists about peace journalism. Now, the seminars, the discussions look much different when you're talking to Anglophone journalists who come from regions where there's an open rebellion against the government. Than from Francophone journalists who come from stable regions. In fact, the situation's gotten so bad in the Anglophone regions that we had to move the seminars out of the Anglophone regions because there was fear for everyone's safety, least importantly mine, mostly the journalist's safety and those from the Cameroon Community Media Network. So yeah, we've had seminars for all journalists there, and one of the things that I did this time that I thought was interesting was conduct a survey of journalists and talk to them about their safety. And you won't be surprised to learn that the journalists in conflict regions feel much less safe than do their counterparts in the Francophone regions, which is completely understandable. I think the most interesting thing from this survey, though, was that the journalists in both regions said that they feel safer if they're practicing peace journalism, that peace journalism gives them a measure of safety that their brethren don't have. And I wasn't so sure about this because I think sometimes the term peace can be seen as inflammatory, which is ironic, but I think that there's a lot of truth to that. So, for example, If you're a rebel group and you hear people talking about peace, maybe what you hear is, well, they're pro-government. They want the rebellion to stop. If you're government and you hear the word peace, maybe you hear, well, they don't want the government to strike out against the rebels. So they're pro-rebel. So there's in Cameroon, a lot of the journalists feel like, and this is an actual phrase one journalist told me, like they're standing between two loaded guns. And I think in many instances in Cameroon that's entirely correct.
So tell me about, is there some published study or summary of differences between the French and the English language press in Cameroon and how they cover the situation?
There's nothing that looks like an academic study, but we have lots of anecdotal evidence. And the anecdotal evidence is pretty consistent with what we've seen in other conflicts. And that is, there's a tendency in mainstream media everywhere to adopt these us versus them narratives. So it's reporting that sees them as the problem. They're the reason why we're fighting. They're the ones who are unreasonable. They're the ones who won't talk peace. And indeed, even reporting that dehumanizes the them. So I think we've seen that on both sides of the conflict in Cameroon, the same way that we might see it, say, in the Middle East. So actually, one of the things I'm talking about in class today, I'm going to show the students visual coverage of the most recent Gaza war. And when you look at the photographs from Palestinian media versus the photographs from Israeli media, it looks like, it doesn't even look like the same conflict. And so both in words and in visuals, this us versus them becomes very apparent. And as I say, in Cameroon, it's not drastically different than what you would see in a lot of other places. In Kashmir, I was in Kashmir a couple of years ago, and you see this very stark contrast between Kashmiri media and mainstream Indian media.
That's extremely interesting. Do you have any thoughts on the extent to which these differences are driven by elite control of the media on each side?
Well, I mean, I think that founding principles of peace journalism is that traditional media has always been much too elite-oriented. So has been talking to elites, getting elite viewpoints, and so on, without really giving a voice to everyday people. So in peace journalism, we call it a voice of the voiceless. And so I think that in any conflict setting, that there's a tendency of the media to want to talk to generals and leaders and politicians, and to, if not ignore, then certainly marginalize those who are most impacted by the conflict. And as we know, those are often the people who suffer the most during conflict, are the poor, are women, children, and so on.
Right. It reminds me of media scholar Robert McChesney talking about the U.S. Postal Service Act of 1792, which provided citizen-directed subsidies for journalism. Newspapers were delivered up to 100 miles for a penny and beyond. Well, at a time when first-class postage was between 6 cents and a quarter. So, and it had a huge impact on making the difference between the United States and most of the other major successful violent revolutions of human history that arguably replaced one brutal repressive system with another. And instead we got, you know, what we have today. So, yeah, do you have any comments on citizen-directed subsidies for journalism as a possible facilitator or creating a better environment for peace journalism?
Well, we could certainly have a lively, lengthy discussion about whether we replaced one brutal regime with another. I don't know. I don't know if I would buy completely into that. But let's, you know, in terms of subsidies for journalism, I guess my thought on that is, to be succinct, no. And here's why. I don't want, as a journalist, I don't want the government involved in picking and choosing who they think a journalist is. I mean, if you look at the current regime that occupies the White House, notice how I avoided the name, the current regime that occupies the White House, imagine if we gave them the authority, or Congress the authority, to say, so these are the favored journalism organizations, and they get our subsidy, and they get our okay, and these other journalism organizations are out. And really, I say that not just with contempt for the current regime, but really for any regime, because anytime whoever's in the White House, whoever's occupying the halls of power, they're going to, would always have a tendency to favor those media that are favorable to them rather than media that are critical of them. So the whole idea of government subsidizing media, of government making some determination as to who is a journalist or not, it makes my skin itch.
Well, I certainly agree with you on the question of allowing the government to designate journalists. McChesney argues that the Postal Service Act of 1792 basically provided subsidies for any newspaper and didn't somehow, and I'm not aware that the government got seriously involved in that. McChesney,
well, but what is it that constitutes a newspaper?
Well, that's a great question, of course. Right.
And who is it that's
and
a
who,
journalist?
And who gets to say what constitutes
that's
a
right.
newspaper?
That's right. And once you have governments making those determinations, then you open the door to all kinds of censorship.
What else would you like to tell KKFI listeners about your program here at Park University?
I'd certainly invite everyone to attend the annual Greater Kansas City Peacebuilding Conference in October 25th at Avila University, 26th at Park University, and 27th at Johnson County Community College. And we hope to see you there.
Great. Thank you so much.